Good evening, this is Life Al, the Story Show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Al number 1242, we present three stories by new writer Sami Karaman. Sami Karaman was born in Ottawa in 1991 to parents of Jordanian descent. He has an older brother and sister. Sami and his family moved to Mississauga, where he now studies communication and professional writing. Although born in Ottawa, Sami takes pride in being a diehard Toronto Maple Leafs fan. Sami Karaman loves to play acoustic guitar and smoke the occasional cigar. Sami is a very, very funny writer. His humor is not laugh-out-loud funny, but subtle, rather observational and often situational. Sami has a unique, distinct, almost casual voice, and he provides the same for the people he writes about, capturing their personalities through character-driven dialogue. Many of his stories, especially his final three, are almost Seinfeld-esque, seemingly about nothing, but really about everything, including issues of identity, and a young man's place in the world as he sets out for adulthood. In tonight's first story, our writer lies in bed and prepares himself for his shift at a job he hates, and as we learn, perhaps for good reason. Let's listen now as Sami Karaman reads his story, Cache 3, tonight on Life Rattle.
Cache 3. By Sami Karaman. They don't understand. No one does. My boss hates me, I explain to my mom. She always makes me the main cashier. I've been there for 3 years. I've got seniority over all these little high school kids, but they let them do whatever they want. Me, I'm trapped on Cache 3. Cache 3 sparks anger and anxiety within me every time my stupid supervisor says those dreaded words. You'll be on Cache 3. I work at Shoppers Drug Mart. It's Sunday. I'm scheduled to work 2 to 9. I wake up at noon and lie in my bed, depressed and in denial. The shift is a huge chunk of my day. 7 hours of sunlight and road hockey time down the drain so that I can stand at a cash register all day and ask every customer if they have an Optimum card. I stay in bed and tell myself that today will be different. I will be the fourth worker in for the shift and assigned to cash register 1 or 5, both located at the far ends of the store, out of sight, solitary, beautiful. I finally get out of bed and prepare myself for the torture. I have a hurried breakfast and tell my mom how much I hate the job and that I'm going to quit soon. She yells at me and asks how I will earn my money. I don't know, I shrug. Allowance? Mom merely smirks. I drive along Winston Churchill Boulevard in the blazing heat and make a left into Meadowvale Town Center. I look down at my watch. It's 1:55. My supervisor demands that I arrive at work 10 minutes early to count my till. I look up at the stupid sign that hangs in the entrance of the store. Live, Love, Laugh, Shoppers Drug Mart. I really hope people don't fall for that ploy. Shoppers couldn't care less if you lived, loved, or laughed, so long as you purchased their overpriced goods. I clock in at 1:58. I knock on the door that leads to every cashier's worst nightmare, or at least mine. Rita. My supervisor answers. Her fiery red hair shakes as she swings the door open. She gives me a fake smile and shows ugly yellow teeth stained from years of smoking. You're late. Come in. Everything she says sounds forced. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
She points to the counter. Count your till.
I count the money and contemplate how her deep voice sounds like a man's. If she ever fires me, I'll be sure to mention this to her on my way out the door.
Hey, move over to 5, Rita speaks into the phone.
Thanks. Bye.
My jaw drops, and I give her the filthiest, most hateful look I can muster.
You'll be on cash 3, she says. Rebecca is moving for you.
Okay, I mumble.
I feel my face steadily redden as I walk out of the computer room. The lineup at cash 3 looks long and curved, with a whole bunch of people checking their watches and sighing. Don't these people have something better to do on a Sunday? Rebecca doesn't say hi to me when I approach.
I don't either.
I slip my till into the register and begin my robotic actions.
Hello, I say to the first customer. Do you have an Optimum card?
An old lady with wrinkly skin approaches the register.
She doesn't greet me.
She slams 3 bags of milk onto the counter and inserts her debit card into the reader before I even have the chance to scan her products.
I haven't scanned your things yet, I say in a flat voice.
Hmm? She croaks.
Please take your card out.
I scan the sticky, smelly, slimy bags of milk.
Do you need any bags? I ask.
They're 5 cents.
Eh?
No.
She inserts her card again.
Please take it out and wait for the message to pop up, I instruct.
She must be deaf. I take out her card and insert it at the correct moment. I look up and gasp at the huge line behind the old lady.
Then I see Rebecca, who finished putting her till in register 5, walk away.
Hey, Rebecca, I yell. Maybe you should open.
Call Kelsey, she tells me.
I watch as she enters the break room, the perfect place to slack. I bend down and find the phone to make a page. I clear my throat.
Kelsey to Cat.
Where are my bags? The old lady interrupts me.
I hang up the phone, embarrassed at my failure to finish the page, and hope that Kelsey got the hint.
I asked you if you wanted any, I say. They're 5 cents.
No, the lady argues, shaking her head.
Her wrinkly chin jiggles.
No, you didn't ask. Gimme bags.
I bag her milk and push it to the side of the counter, indicating that I want her to get out of the way.
Kelsey, meanwhile, appears next to me on cash 2, angry that I paged her.
Where's Rebecca? She asks.
No clue, I mumble.
Well, next time, call her.
Kelsey and I kill off the line in about 10 minutes. I feel incredibly let down when I look at the clock.
Only 2:10.
6 more hours and 50 minutes of standing in the same spot dealing with the same shit. I make petty conversation with the hot girls buying tampons and makeup. This lessens my anger. I figure I should make the best out of my day.
Fat chance.
A large lady with a cart full of stuff approaches my counter. She is very friendly and all, but I can feel something's up.
I have coupons, she says.
Okay, I say.
For what?
Everything. She pulls a binder from her cart and opens it and reveals rows upon rows of coupons. What kind of person owns a binder for the sole purpose of collecting coupons? She takes them out one by one. I check the expiry date on each coupon as a line forms behind her. I tell myself to calm down as I pass the 10th coupon. At the 15th, I feel like crying. The last and 23rd one has expired.
Sorry, ma'am, I say. I can't accept this one. It's expired.
Let me see.
she snatches it from me. Ah, okay, never mind. She puts her hand out. What? I ask. I'd like all the coupons back. I'll come by some other time. I hand the coupons back, and she walks away with her 23 items scattered over my counter. Is there someone else you can call? An old lady from the back of the line asks. I bend down to page Kelsey again, but before I can pick up the phone, I hear a voice behind me say, "Excuse me?" I look up and see a 12-year-old girl with a $5 bill in her hand. Could I get bus money? When my till opens, yes. I turn back to the phone. No, I need it now, she argues. My bus leaves in 5 minutes. I'd like 5 loonies. I'm sorry, I can only open my till during a cash transaction, I tell her. I clear my throat and finally speak into the phone. Kelsey to cash. I begin ringing in the next customer. I'm not even the least upset when she pays with a credit card. As Kelsey and I work through the line, I wonder when my till will open. So far, every customer has paid with debit or credit cards. The young girl folds her arms and grits her teeth. She wears an Aeropostale shirt and shorts. She seems so free. Why can't I be 12 with no job and no worries? I'd even get allowance. When I glance at the young girl, she looks close to crying. She reaches her boiling point and exclaims, I want to speak to your manager. My heart skips a beat. Why didn't I think about that before? Rita will use this as an excuse to choke me out with her massive forearms. Then, all of a sudden, it dawns on me how Rebecca and Kelsey slack all the time, and Rita always puts me on cash 3. She's sexist. That's it. And now this poor, little, whimpering girl will tell Rita on me. I begin, sorry, she's unavail. Don't be an ass. Kelsey has an evil look in her eyes. She smells blood. What is it with women hating me? Does my mom even love me? She wants to talk to Rita, so let her. Excuse me. I hear a voice, turn, and recognize the coupon lady. Meanwhile, Kelsey calls Rita from her phone. I watch my fat, manly supervisor waddle towards us with a puppy-eyed look on her mean face. She gives the little girl a hug. Yes, I say to the coupon lady, trying to sound polite in front of Rita. You didn't give me back all the coupons, she exclaims. Actually, I did, I say, and look away. I'm not really listening to her. I'm too caught up in what's happening right in front of my line of customers. I listen as the girl recounts the story through sniffles and sobs. The hot girls who bought their tampons and makeup return my weak smile with looks of disgust as they learn about my ruthless, non-gentlemanlike behavior. I can't find my coupons for the Tide, the lady persists. Can you check? I don't have your coupons. I don't mean to scream, but I do. And it isn't a soft scream, either. I pause and look apologetic. Rita glares at me while she hands the little girl 5 loonies and doesn't even take her $5 bill. You can stay until 10 today for what you did to that little girl, she says loudly for everyone to hear. I look at the people in line. They nod in support of her decision. I half expect them all to throw stones at me and leave me bleeding in some ditch. And ma'am, I have a $10 gas card for you, Rita says to the coupon lady before giving the little girl one last hug. Compensation for the... She pauses and glares at me with a disturbing smile. Poor service.
That was Sammy Karaman reading his story Cash 3. Our next story is about unreciprocated longing as Sammy picks up a female friend at her home for an aimless drive. Let's listen now as Sammy Karaman reads his second story tonight. Jenna.
Jenna by Sammy Caraman. I pull up to Jenna's house on Pintail Circle in my mother's silver Hyundai. I grab my cell phone from the cup holder, click on Jenna's name, and text, "Here." I wait a minute and fiddle with the sleeves of a brand new shirt I bought at FC UK. Jenna opens her front door and walks towards my car with one hand in the other dangling at her waist. She wears a Coach satchel, jean short shorts, and a turquoise tank top. Jenna opens the car door and sits next to me. "Here," she mocks in a deep voice. I glance at her and drive away. She giggles, looks at me, then looks out the window. "What?" I ask. "Nothing." I loop around Pintail Circle and get back on Osprey Boulevard. Jenna lives in a nice area with a lot of parks, trees, and soccer fields. It's about 8 in the evening, and the summer sun sets beautifully over the horizon, bathing us in a pink light. I make a right onto Battleford Road. "Was it hard for you to get the car?" Jenna asks. "No, why?" "I don't know." She twirls her hair. "You only just got your license, you know." "No way," I say. "I've had it for, like, a year. Since grade 12. I hit a red light. I turn to Jenna. She wears a playful frown. Her eyes look small. They're a bluish-green color. Her skin is a little pale, but I like it that way. Her brown hair stops at her shoulders. I make a left onto Winston Churchill Boulevard. "Did you get my shirt?" she asks. Her voice sounds soft and high-pitched. I open the armrest as I drive and hand her the blue shirt. "Thanks." "No problem. It's convenient that I was still at work when you texted me." "Nah, I could have just driven back and got it," Jenna says. "But we were hanging out today anyways, so I thought I'd just ask you to bring it." "Right," I say. "So, where are we headed?" "I don't know. Wherever. I've been so bored today." "Yeah, me too." "Oh my God," Jenna says. She angles her body towards me and crosses her legs. "Yesterday, I forgot to give a customer their change. So, you know how we're not supposed to charge for a bag to open our till? Well, I did it anyways. Rita got so mad." "You shouldn't have done that," I say. "But, who cares? It's just Shoppers Drug Mart." "Yeah, I guess." I turn left on Argentia Road and park on the street. Jenna and I get out of the car and walk towards Starbucks. She looks at me, hugs her arms, and bumps her shoulder against mine. "It's cold." I put my arm around her and rub. She laughs. A few people sit on the patio. Inside, it's quiet and almost empty. We stand in line. When it's our turn, I pull a $10 bill out of my pocket. "What do you want?" I ask Jenna. "I'll get my own," she says, raising her thin eyebrows. "Okay." I act like nothing happened, but I feel awkward. I order a red lemonade drink. Jenna gets the same. We sit across from each other in the dimly lit Starbucks. Jenna crosses her legs. "So?" "I think my orthodontist has it in for me," I tell her. "Why?" "My mom keeps asking for a discount. I think he's going to screw up my teeth on purpose now to get back at her." "Have you heard about Julian and Kristen?" Jenna interjects. "No," What? Oh my God, how haven't you heard?
I don't know, I say. I'm surprised to learn you know them.
I know all.
Jenna brushes her hands through the air in a circle, the nails on her short fingers painted pink.
What polish do you put on your fingernails? They look nice.
I don't. Jenna smiles and shows her small, straight teeth.
That's how they look.
Oh.
Yeah, anyways, they did it, you know?
Oh yeah, I say.
That's kind of gross.
Kristen looks like a gargoyle, almost.
Yeah.
Didn't you and Julian used to have a thing, I ask?
Jenna flushes.
No, he used to like me.
Right.
Smile.
I smile.
Jenna traces her finger along her straight teeth and looks at mine.
Why'd you get braces? You don't even need them.
I don't know, I shrug.
She frowns at me.
What do you want to do?
I don't know, I say again.
I scratch my chin.
Do you want to, like, go walk around Walmart or something?
I guess.
We leave Starbucks and start towards my car.
Wait.
Want to just walk? Jenna suggests.
Yeah, sure.
We reach the road that separates Starbucks from Walmart. Jenna hugs herself with her thin arms.
It's freezing.
She looks at me as we cross the street and stands real close.
Look, my lips are blue.
She purses her lips at me and then laughs. I put my arm around her waist and she pushes off my hips.
I really hope we don't run into my brother in there. I nod towards Walmart. He works there.
So what?
He's just annoying. He won't stop talking.
Jenna and I enter Walmart. We walk close together and navigate through crowds of people. I take her to the seasonal section. We sit on a swing set. She slips her flip-flops off, pushes the ground with her feet, and swings. The tips of her bubble toes turn white with every push. She smiles at me and folds her hands on her lap. Then she pulls her cell phone out of her satchel.
Aren't you going to ask me how my trip to Ottawa was? She asks.
She looks up from her phone briefly, then looks back.
How was it? I barely whisper.
I turn my face away from Jenna.
It was fun.
I can tell his roommates hate me.
Jenna puts her phone back in her satchel.
They're just always quiet when I'm there, and I bet they're angry he never goes out with them on weekends and stuff.
I get up and guide her to a different swing set. This time, we sit across from each other. I watch her closely when she speaks. She licks her thin red lips. We went to get ice cream at McDonald's late at night. Liam held the door open for someone. The guy was like, "Thanks, bro," and then shoved his shoulder into his. It was funny.
Sounds funny.
Shut up, she says with a quick smile, then laughs.
You had to be there.
I guess.
What's wrong?
Nothing.
So, you get the car often then?
Yeah, we can go to Starbucks anytime.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Jenna brushes her small hand through her short brown hair. I catch a whiff of the strawberry scent and my insides squirm.
So listen, she says. In like 2 weeks, Liam's going to pick me up at the airport. You know, he's training to be a pilot.
My parents will be at work, though.
Could you give me a lift to the airport? I'd really like that.
I muster a smile.
Sure.
That was Sammy Karaman reading his story, Jenna. Family dynamics, particularly between siblings and between a father and son, is the focus of our final story tonight. Let's listen now as Sammy Karaman reads his story, Garbage Man.
Garbage Man by Sammy Karaman. I stand in the kitchen. I reach up and grab a dinner plate from the cabinet. I hear my older brother, Rami, say my name. I listen through the back screen door as my dad tells him, I know. I asked him today. They want me to mow the lawn. I don't want to mow the lawn. Do you want salad? My sister asks. I turn to Emil. Yeah. Emil stands over our ornate kitchen table and scoops salad into a bowl. Dad opens the screen door behind her and comes in from the backyard. He wears a light blue pajama gown and eyeglasses too big for his face. Can you mow the lawn tomorrow? He asks me. I stay silent. Dad sits in Emil's usual place, at the table, by a large window that overlooks our yellow lawn burnt from the strong July sun. A tree stump sticks out of the ground where a plum tree used to grow that we recently cut down. Emil sits in my usual spot across from Dad. Rami walks into the kitchen from the backyard with a plate filled with burgers. I sit at the end of the table between my dad and my sister, and Rami takes the seat across from me. I ignore their conversation about Emil's job at the RBC. I grab a bun from the Dempster's bag and walk to the kitchen counter. I place the bread in the toaster and sit back down at the table. In the microwave, Sam? Dad says. Huh? You used the microwave? I don't get it. Did I put my bread in the microwave? Your bread, he persists. Where'd you put it? The toaster. Dad returns to the conversation about the RBC. I build my burger, adding mayo, ketchup, pickles, onions, and lettuce. I hold the burger in one hand, my smartphone in the other, and surf the web while I eat. What have you been doing upstairs, Sam? Emil asks. I look up at her. She wears shorts and bikini straps stick out from underneath her tank top. She's been tanning in the backyard all day. She bites a chunk out of her burger, briefly revealing slightly crooked teeth. She covers her mouth with her hand. Homework, I grunt. I look back down at my phone. Do you do homework with your phone out? She asks. I don't answer. Can you mow the lawn tomorrow, please? Dad asks again. I don't get it. I set my phone down. Rami's job is the lawn, like how I take out the garbage every week. Do you listen to yourself when you talk? Dad folds his arms. Does it make logical sense? Yeah, it does. The lawn isn't his job, Emil says. Is the garbage my job, I say? I think so, because that's the thing I do, without anyone asking, every Monday. And I don't try to pawn anything off on you guys. I look at Rami, and then viciously bite into my burger. He stops eating. His eyes point down at his plate. Those nights when you're late at hockey, I do the garbage, he says. Yeah, how often is that? I ask. There's no right answer here that makes me have to do the lawn, which is your job. For every time he does a lawn, Dad points a finger at Rami and then at me. You should do it twice. You're the youngest. That doesn't sound like a right answer, I say. I thought you said there's no right answer, Emil says. Yeah. I just said that didn't sound like a right answer. But nice try, anyways. You don't have to be so angry and defensive, Emil says. You don't have to accuse me of everything. My burger's down to one last bite. They aren't even close to finishing their meal. I stand up, walk to the garbage bin, and dump the remains of a tomato slice. I walk to the counter, place my plate in the sink, and gobble the last bite of my burger. I glance at my family. I don't want to sit here any longer. Are you finished eating? Dad asks. There's more. Finished. I walk back to the bin next to Dad. I tie the bag and lift it out. Tomorrow's garbage day, and I want to get it over with. There's a lot more in the garbage, Dad says. We spent the weekend cleaning out the basement. The lengthy chore amounted to 3 bags of garbage. The dead plum tree filled 3 yard waste bags. We have over 5 bags of recycling, plus our 2 recycling bins. We have old carpets, laundry bins, and shelves. I also have to take out a bunch of metal rods, which held up the ping pong table that Rami took apart yesterday. Let us help you, Dad offers. No thanks, I say. I don't need others to do my work for me.
That was Sammy Kerriman reading his story Garbage Man. This concludes Life Rattle number 1242. My name is Lori Callis. I recorded Sammy reading his stories. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman. Tune into Life Rattle next Thursday evening to hear 3 more stories from new writer Sammy Kerriman.